Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, August 23rd, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Doing good.
We're just fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really good. Really, really good.
Oh, that's great.
Well, let's see. It's 1 week till the big event, huh?
Oh, we are counting down. I am singing my songs, getting ready to do that show I told you about. I was going to do a little program of folk songs. Not everybody knows that I used to sing folk songs when I was younger, and I did that for a number of years. So I thought, well, I'll just share that about myself, and we'll have a good time with it. So that's what
okay, great. Now, are these songs you wrote, or you or
well,
popular
folk songs
that you're singing,
are
or?
Songs that are developed without, usually without being written down. People adopt them and then they sing them sitting on their front porch, or you know, it's usually a country thing. People that don't have access to a lot of media, or in olden times, people didn't have it. It was just not there, except for the very wealthy and those who were in religious orders. And so songs were made up by minstrels and all kinds of ways that they got started, and then they'd just be repeated for generations and generations. And it's fun to watch the movement of them coming from the old country to the new country, and how they developed and how they changed. So that was my area of fascination. From when I was 13 and had to spend a lot of time in bed to when I was about 21. I did it for a while professionally and had a wonderful time doing it. So I'll just do about a half hour's worth of it for the people this time.
Okay,
it'll be
great.
It'll be fun for me to hark back. It's 50 years ago now that this happened, so it really is going back a long way, but it's something that is just, you know, something to share with people. It's kind of fun for people to get to know you a little bit better.
Okay, wonderful. And Jim, how about you? What are you planning to share?
I'm just going to offer a question and answer session for folks. We have a lot of repeat attendees, and it's been quite a while since we've done questions, so that'll be what I do.
Okay, great. Great. Okay, you guys ready to go on to the riff or anything else you want to add?
We are.
Okay. Okay, this is from Kuo from August 16th, 1986. Separation seems to run very deep and one forgets that the stones sing, that the earth shouts with rejoicing, and that the trees skip in the springtime. How easy it is to feel oneself separate from life that indwells all things. How easy it is to feel separate from oneself, to feel that there are factions within the self which must be reconciled, to find oneself analyzing and reanalyzing to no avail. The only road from separation into unity is keyed with meditation. Some there are who benefit from meditating at great length. Some there are who benefit from meditating a brief few minutes in each day. And some there are whose meditations are in action, and through action they are centered and one with all that there is. Therefore, do not assume that you know what meditation is and what your goals should be towards it, but rather, as you meditate, listen to that voice which speaks within and meditate as that voice instructs you. There is no set time, nor is there a set method. There is one thing, however, which we must emphasize, and that is the fidelity to the practice.
All right. Thank you so much, Monica. We are, what? Shall we say that we are a complex of sensing devices that takes in things that we see and hear and feel and touch, all those five senses that we have. And with those senses that are more than our body, our intuition, our hunches, our sudden knowing that comes from somewhere beyond. We're sensing mechanisms, and so it's so important that we sense correctly, that we have accurate information. On the other hand, it's hard to question yourself. You feel that you know what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what's going on. And yet, it's good to question yourself, not in the way in which you're judging yourself and saying, well, you just don't know, but in the way of saying, let's go deeper. Let's sense into that which is meeting the eye. And surely, we have all had the wonderful experience of walking in nature. Just walking. Not roughly, ruggedly exercising, trying to get things done for the day, but just walking. And we have come upon beauty that stuns us and startles us and brings us to the moment with an intensity that was lacking. And then we do hear the stones sing. We do hear the earth shout with rejoicing. We do feel the trees skipping in the springtime. And we know that nature is alive, full of love, embracing us and everything in the creation, and dancing, always dancing. Then there are those times when we are quiet for a while. Maybe we don't think we're meditating. Maybe we just happen to be quiet for a while. We're not talking. We're drifting. And suddenly something comes clear to us, some realization from within. And we see at a different level. We hear at a different level. We find our hearts opening. and a new understanding happening about ourselves and how everything fits together for us and makes us who we are. And these are precious times. There isn't anyone that has had more natural resistance to meditation than I. I know that it startles people to hear me say that. But I've always been one that knew the value of meditation and wanted to meditate and looked for friends to meditate with. And why was I always looking for a friend to meditate with? It was because I'm not very good at it myself. I have never been able to master this mind of mine that keeps clicking over, awake or asleep. It goes on and on. Not in a way in which I dislike, but rather in an entertaining, enjoyable way. It makes it hard for me to want to shut it off. But I do every day. Fortunately, I have a companion in my husband, and he and I take the task of meditation seriously. And we spend time at it. We don't spend a lot of time, but we give it our best shot for the day, twice a day. In the morning, we offer thanksgiving and praise. We have a morning offering, and we have our prayers and meditation time, readings, hymns. It's a lovely time together, and it gets us up and going for the day, lets us make our intention clear so that we at least start the day off knowing who we are and why we're here. At the end of the day, we come together again about 12 hours later, maybe a little longer than that. We make our affirmations, we meditate again, and we pray. And at bedtime, we pray the Lord's Prayer. And all of these times are hacked out of our day by the hardest. There are always reasons why you don't want to take the time to meditate. Trust me, I know. I've been there many a time. And it's always seductive. Oh, well, you know, let's let it go just today. No. We, for the most part, we know that we need to do these things for our soul's health. And we do know that that is important to us. I thank God that I have someone that helps me with this, because I do not think I would be so faithful otherwise. It is so hard for me to sit and meditate, just sit and do nothing. I'm restless. My mind is restless, not my body so much. I can read for hours. I can sit in front of a computer and be happy working or playing. But it's the mind that is so busy. But is there love in that busyness? I think that's always the question. And that's the quality of my life that I hope to improve with these daily times of silence. I hope you'll take the time for silence. Dear sisters and brothers of the open heart, I know that for the most part you come to us through the filter of the Law of One. And I'm so grateful that you're here. Thank you for listening. And that time that we have with you is precious. I love sharing the energy with you. Even if you're listening to this on the replay, that energy is still there, and our auras are joined for that time. And I really appreciate and embrace that. And I do sneak in a request, you know, that I be able to get up on my soapbox from time to time and share the best that I know in hopes that it will help you. Ignore me if it feels like the right thing to do, by all means, but if it feels like the right thing, give it a try. Give silence a try. I think you will find that that which is within you will reward you over and over for the effort that you make to enter that silence and come to that place within the open heart where consciousness resides and the Creator and love with it. Thank you, everybody. I'll get off my soapbox now. Monica, what do we have today?
Well, first I have a comment about what you just said and about this this passage that I read from Kuo. And this part right here, some who benefit meditating a few minutes each day, some whose meditations are in action, and through action they are centered in one with all that there is. And I had never noticed that before. I mean, I just now caught that when I read it, and that makes me wonder if there's maybe a broader definition of meditation here, because I thought at first, well, meditation is just, you know, sitting still and being in that silence. But what do you think
the action? There are a couple of I understand. Sorry, I thought you were done. I'm sorry. Did you have more?
That's
or
okay.
Shall I answer?
No, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. There are a couple of things that come to mind when you ask me that, and Jim, I'll give you a chance to answer also, but I have two things that come to mind. One is when I was 21, my first library job professionally was in the reproduction room in the bowels of University of Louisville Library. And there, anything that needed reproduction, you know, Xeroxing or library cards, you know, then it was all on catalog cards, and we reproduced the catalog cards. That, you know, you have an author card, a title card, subject cards, and so we reproduced those cards for the catalogs and cut them, and I manned the Xerox machine. That was my job, and lots of professors had things that they needed copied, and law students and medical students had things that they needed copied, graduate students and so forth. So I Xeroxed all day. And especially with the law students, they would need like 36 copies of a 39-page paper. And so I would sit in front of a series of shelves, which is how I sorted them, and I would put out the 39 copies that I was making of this 36-page document, and I would sort it. I would sort 36 pages, and it was repetitive, and it went on and on and on. And in that repetition, I no longer had to think, but I had to pay attention enough to get it right, or I'd mix up the pages. So after a while, I would come into a state of really high meditation. And it did a wonderful thing to me to be involved in this repetitive action that I didn't need to think about beyond just getting a very simple action right. So that was one thing. I used to enjoy so much sorting these things out, because I could depend on it to put me in a wonderful meditative frame of mind. And the other thing, I would be sitting and knitting. I would knit. And after a while, that repetition, you know, of the stitch was automatic. And I simply had to make sure that I was following the pattern. And you could spend hours doing this, or stitchery. And even though you were doing something, the mind was relaxed and repetitive. And I think a third thing that does come to mind is when athletes are working out, people that jog or run or lift weights, do things with a lot of repetitions, there's no need to think about it. You just have to pay attention to the action that you're doing and getting it right. And in that repetition, I think, it puts you in a state of mind. I think sometimes computer games like Forsting or Solitaire, it puts you in a state of mind that is very philosophical and meditative. So those are the sorts of actions that come to mind when I read that sentence. Jim, what do you think? Am I missing something?
No, I totally agree. Before I really got into meditation much myself, I heard of walking meditations where you would do what you were talking about at the first part of the program, just walk in nature and enjoy the beauty and then feel a harmony with it. And I think that puts you in that frame of mind as well. I think that anything we do with our bodies that's rhythmic, repetitive, and that can be eventually relegated to body memory so that it frees the mind to focus can be something that enhances this meditative state. And I don't think the meditative state's relegated only to sitting in silence and not moving. I think eventually that it is a goal, perhaps, and quite possible that one meditates at all times, no matter what you're doing. If you're able to focus yourself on the seeking of the open heart, of sharing love unconditionally, of seeing people as souls, and that becomes real enough in your life that there are times when the daily round of activities offers the opportunity for meditation too. I think that's rather an advanced course, but I think that's really where we're headed here in third density, and we introduce ourselves to this whole concept by getting to the silent, restricted to one place, eyes closed, traditional type of meditation. But I believe we can expand it out to include the whole realm of activity in third density.
Yeah, come to think of it, I've had great meditations doing the dishes.
Well, there's a book written about that, Chop Wood, Carry Water, about moving meditation.
That's right.
And I was thinking it could even, I mean, I guess to be in that state of mind where there's stillness, definitely that can come from rhythmic action like Tai Chi. My husband practices Tai Chi, among other martial arts, and that's called moving meditation. But then I when I read it, I actually was wondering if Kuo was referring to even being in the flow and doing, you know, being out in the world, taking action that you feel compelled to do. And yet, I mean, there have been times when I'd be talking to someone, maybe they were going through a rough time or whatever, and the words just, I guess it was a type of channeling. I mean, the words just flowed out, and I just felt totally at one with that person, and I knew that I was, you know, saying the right thing for that. I mean, it's not something that happens. I mean, it just happens spontaneously. It's not something that happens like I have to think about it, but it just kind of flows out. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd call that meditation.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and that spirit comes in, and as you say, I mean, just living. I think the effort of trying to, you know, when you're taking it seriously and trying to give the very best of yourself that you can, I think there's a prayer that comes out, the spirit, you know, oh, help, you know. Let me do this well. Let me give the best that I can. And I think that you get a lift, and you come together with your higher self somehow. And it is a kind of channeling, but it's the channeling that we all can do. You know, there's no art to it. There's just the intensity and the focus and the desire to serve that is just part of being a good human being. And I think we all have that. I really do. I totally think that that's part of what they meant. Christmas. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I've had the same experience. And, Jim, don't you have a wonderful story of an atmosphere between two people that was fighting and was scary? And all of a sudden you found yourself talking and they were actually listening and you thought, my gosh, what's running my mouth? Because don't I recall that?
Yeah, I'm amazed you remember. I was back in college my freshman year. I wasn't at all a spiritually awakened person. I hadn't begun seeking on a conscious level yet. And a friend of mine, my roommate and I were walking through one of the student lounges one day, and we both work for the underground newspaper, and there was an article in there that my roommate had written about, I guess, football players and the general public of the general students at that college. It was during the Vietnam War days and lots of demonstrations, and there was a lot of separation of, you know, factions on campus. And as we're going through the student lounge, a fellow who happened to be from my hometown but was on the football team came by and took Jamie, my roommate, around the throat. He had his hands around the throat, and he was starting to strangle him because he'd had this article read to him. He hadn't actually read it himself, but he had it read to him, and it was not, you know, flattering for the football players and so forth. So he was ready to take Jamie apart and quite able to do it as well. And all of a sudden, I just started talking. You know, I said, you know, I don't remember the exact words, but just this feeling of we had to learn how to live together and resolve our difficulties without being physical. And, you know, you're much better than this. There's a, you know, better self, and you can do better than this. And basically, and I had no idea where it was all coming from. And all of a sudden, he just, you know, stopped and he started listening. And I thought that was, at the time, quite unusual.
Yeah, I bet you've had it happen 1,000 times again since then, right?
in less intense ways, yeah.
Yeah, less intense.
Nobody was going to get hurt here, you know, if I happen to fail.
Right. Oh, that's great. Okay, our first question today is from Lyson. Warm greetings to you, Monica and Carla, and I'm going to extend that to Jim as well. Reading from the January 28, 1981 transcripts, Carla mentions, and I quote, "We helped with the now historic Mind Link of 1977 in regards to Andrija, I don't know how to pronounce this, Andrija Puharik?
Puharik. Uh-huh.
Okay. My question is, what was the mind link? I did some searching around the net but found no immediate answer, but it sounds like it was something considerable at the time it took place. Thank you for the service. Love and light from Lyson."
Okay, well, this is something that happened to me before Jim came along, so I'll answer this one. It was 1977. I'd known Andrea for 3 years, and Andrea and Don had gotten pretty close. They'd talked quite a bit. Andrea was a researcher. He'd written several books that had caught the attention of the public. He'd written one on sacred mushrooms. That was the first one he wrote. He'd written one about a Dutch psychic and got substantiated some of the things that this guy was able to do. He was pretty amazing. And Andrea, you know, was a scientist. He was checking out, trying to figure out how it worked, what was happening, and he did the same thing with Uri Geller, came out with that, I think, in the middle 70s, before the mind link, anyway. And he wrote a book called Uri, and that was a bestseller. So Don had initially read about Andrea in Uri and then called him up, because in the book Uri, there was a whole appendix of channeling that had come to Andrea through various sources. And supposedly they were various higher beings that came in through pressing down the buttons on a tape recorder, even though there was nobody there. Andrea just loaded the tape recorder, and then the buttons would go down, and this message would come through. It was a fairly computerized sounding message. And so these messages, the ones that had come through from people, the one that had come through from the tape recorder, were enough like the channeling that we were doing, that we were receiving from our source, that Don wanted Andrea to know about it. And also, it was quite shocking, actually. We had written a book in 1969. It was the very first thing Don and I had done together when we first started working together. And it was a book of fiction called The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater. And in that book, one of the characters was a fellow named Pablo. And Pablo was Andrea, to the point that it was a physical description of him was exact. His description of the kind of person that he was pretty close. And even the house that he lived in was so exact that when we drove up to his mansion in 1974, my mouth was just open. I thought, Andrea, this house is in our book. But when I saw it, the only difference is there were peonies all along the circle driveway. And he says, oh, we had those taken out 3 years ago. So between 69 and 74, they'd been taken out. So that was the beginning of our relationship, and it was a close one because there aren't very many peers that you have when you're researching in this area. It's considered a soft area scientifically. You don't get a lot of scientists to talk to. You get people that are coming from the standpoint of channeling and so forth, but their background is in the arts. If they have, you know, college at all, the background is in arts somewhere, in the liberal arts. So Andrea got some information in 76, in early 77, that really disturbed him, and it was that the people that were visiting us and offering these messages to humankind, these entities from elsewhere, had just about decided to give up and go home, you know, take their ball and go home, because they were no longer in the belief that humankind was capable of coming together and creating fourth density, basically, creating an atmosphere of mutual love and understanding. And so Andrea asked, well, if I got a bunch of people together and we created that, would that make a difference? Would you stay? And you know, it was like the man looking for 10 honest men so that the city would be saved. And the answer was in the affirmative. Yes, if you can do this, then we will continue trying to help. So we agreed. And Don was considered the co-partner. He and Andrea together created and it was called the Mind Link, for obvious reasons. That was what we were supposed to do, is link up person to person to person to person and create a unified effort to become that which we had not been able to be before, that which would enable us to come together in love and understanding. So we all gathered at Andrea's mansion. Some were living there. Some were living in motels. There were about 30 of us. Some of those who were with it were psychics that were of a certain age. Others were 18 to 24 and had been originally collected, you might say, by Andrea as a gene pool in case the world came apart, as the messages sometimes suggested that it might, because basically if humankind couldn't wake up and listen and do this thing, get together and link up and love each other, then it was no telling what was going to happen. You know, Armageddon could be around the corner because humankind had the ability to create Armageddon with their bombs. So we gathered and we meditated twice a day. We did exercises in the morning, and we took our meals together when we could. But the center of our gatherings were these two meditations. Andrea and Don created a series of concentric circles. Those who were, oh, I would say they considered themselves the best of the lot, the ones who had middle age or maybe older than that even, and were psychics, were known for their abilities and so forth. And definitely there were some ego questions there. They sat in the center of the circle, and then in concentric circles around, I think there were four circles, sat those who were younger and who didn't have the importance. But Don and I sat in the outer circle because we were anchoring the circle. Don was at the north and I was at the south, basically the positive and the negative poles of a battery. And in magical language, the feminine is considered the negative side, the masculine, the positive side, and it doesn't have to do with service to others polarity. It simply has to do with energy, positive and negative being necessary to put together to have the energy work. So sun and moon, think of it like that. I was the moon, Don was the sun. So we were in the outer, and we sat for a half hour. And what was happening to all of us, each in our own way, was that we were having a common vision take place within us. All of us were being taken aboard some kind of place. Many called it a craft. Some just had a feeling of place. And we were being given instructions. Some of the instructions were clear. Some of them were not. But it was all about working together and loving each other. So we would meditate and we would give ourselves, set our intention to love and serve together and just do the best we could to hold that intention for a half hour. And we did this for about a month. We did most of it in Andrea's estate in New York. He had a huge living room, and that was where we sat for our meditations. And then we all gathered together and caravaned down to North Carolina to Josh Reynolds' place in the country, and we would do our meditations in his barn, a great big thing that had been built during the Depression with NRA funds. There was a whole
WPA.
Village. Oh, excuse me, WPA. There was a whole village of cabins, and there was a generator. It was living completely off the grid, and it was an experiment that the government ran in basic living, how to go back to nature and do that. So the government was doing amazing things during. Anyway, this was just left over and was in private hands. It was in Josh Reynolds' hands at this point. And he gave it to us and meditated with us, and it was a wonderful place down there. Of course, it was absolutely gorgeous. The North Carolina woods are wonderful, and there was a place you could fish, a little brook that ran through the... And there was a great big lake that had been created. It was for the generator, for the electricity. And that was also a wonderful place. Several UFOs were sighted. It was a very spooky time, really. But the center of it was always the meditations. And at the end of it, I think six different psychics got in touch with me or Andrea to let us know that they had picked up this effort and that it had worked. That it was positive. So that was the Mind Link of 1977. And I don't think it made a blip on anybody's radar, but it did on the awareness of those who were heavily involved in meditating and in psychic research. So we were satisfied that it was an effort that was worth it. And it was a very exciting time for us. we really enjoyed it and saw a lot of things that we never could explain, a lot of psychic activity. And that was very enjoyable also. I had never had any doubts that these things happened, but it was good to see them happening. we made friends that were deep friends at that time, and I have kept some of those relationships even through till now. So even though it was a long, long time ago, 77, what is that? 77, 80, 91. It's 30-some years ago. So that was the mind link. And something along those same lines I might mention in that regard happened. I'm not sure what the date was. Oh, yes, I am, because it was 9/11. 3 weeks before the Twin Towers were taken down, a friend of mine got in touch with us to say that he communed with Mother Nature every night, which I knew that he did. It was his way. And that she had said that she was going to stop speaking with him and with anybody because they had just about, they were ready to give up on planet Earth. So he asked us to do something, and Jim and I talked about it, and we decided we'd start meditating. We do the Gaia meditation, or Gaia. Some people say Gaia. But meditating for Mother Earth. And we do that to this day. And I think that it was because of the great horror of the destruction of the Twin Towers. Things happen in the psychic world in time, space, long before they happen in manifestation. And this, I think, was happening and causing those forces of nature that are in link with humankind to just want to give up the ship and not try to link with us in spirit anymore. So once again, meditation was the answer. And as I said, it's one of those things that L&L Research does as part of our service. And people all over the globe now tune in with us and meditate nightly at 9. It doesn't really matter about the time as long as they do it, because it's 9 o'clock at different times all over the world. So, you know, some meditate with us and some meditate with us in spirit. But I think that in time-space, that different way of looking at time means that it's all simultaneous. So there are ways in which you can comfort those great forces of nature and those sources of help that are from elsewhere. And they all have to do with meditating and asking, you know, asking for help in learning more about being a good person. I think it's as simple as that.
Very fascinating, as Buck would say. That's a fascinating story. I'm not finding the thread right now. I'm looking at the Bring Forth website, but I remember there was a discussion about Andrea, and I remember somebody saying there was some controversy about him.
Yes,
and something about the MK Ultra program or something. What's up with that? I don't really.
Oh, well, Andrea was a person that was a scientist but had done a lot of work with psychics, and he himself was a man of some psychic power, and he learned how to do remote viewing back when it was just called, I think, what? It wasn't called remote viewing at the beginning. It was just called going out of body. Anyway, go ahead.
Astral projection.
Astral projection, right. Thank you. And so the government became interested in this ability that people were demonstrating to be able to do things like go out of body to scan different places and see inside things, see inside the human body, see inside a building, see what was happening anywhere that they wished to move in time and space. And they thought this might be a very handy thing for their people. The CIA thought that it would be handy, so they asked Andrea to train some of their people which he did. And remote viewing became a very controversial tool in the hands of those who might use it not for the service of humankind, but for in pursuit of national policy, which might or might not be in line with love and light. Another thing that he did that put him up against the government was that when he worked with Andrea Puharich, Andrea was also working with the government in Israel, working with those of Mossad. And it was felt that Andrea knew more than he should. And the government became paranoid about him and put him on various lists and basically drove him from the country. And some say that eventually they killed him. I do not know what the truth of it is, but I would not be surprised to know that that was the case, because I do know that he at one point he had to leave the country, and he lived for a while in Mexico just to get out of the range of being taken out. He left virtually in what he said a hail of gunfire. And he's driving away in his little trailer, driving as fast as he could, and gunshots had dinged the trailer up, but had not messed up anything. And he got away and kept going. Eventually, his house burned down, and that too was found to be Don happened to be in the house. Andrea was not. But Don was in the house living and you know, waiting for him to get back. He was at one time planning on moving up there to live on the property with him in his guest house that had been built for people, and it was a good place to live. It was not at all basic. It was quite nice. Anyway, so he was up there making arrangements to move up there. And he came back from breakfast and saw smoke coming out of the house and got all the people out, found a ladder tall enough to reach to the third floor, and got people out of their little dormitory that they had up there. And the house burned to the ground. It was found that accelerant that was used by the CIA and nobody else that the fire people knew of at that time, as they told Don, was used to cause the fire. And it was a shame, because people were in the house and they could have burned down if Don hadn't seen the smoke and gotten the people out. So that was a scary thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if Andrea lost his life. Certainly they came in within days of Andrea's death and took all the papers that he had so carefully preserved, writing down each and every experiment, the results of it. He'd done this for decades. And so that was the controversy. He was actually a very genial man, a sweet man, a good person, who, I mean, he had a weakness for women. There was no question about that. But basically, he lived to serve. He lived to work. And nothing would get in the way of that. I mean, he always worked. He was always on task, on target, moving to the next research project and so forth. And all of these things that happened to him, they were peripheral. They were details. He was a man with a great mind. And he was one of Don's few real friends, so I mourned his loss.
Do you think he was aware that the work he was doing for the government was being used to control people? I think that's what the controversy, or that's what people were talking about.
I suspect that he ended up knowing it. And I think that it really bothered him, but there was not much he could do about it. You know, the cat was out of the bag. If he hadn't taught them, other people would have. And did. I mean, there were other people also working with the government on that same remote viewing. Imagine if you could talk to Robert Monroe today, you'd hear some interesting stories.
Yeah, because I think that's what the controversy was. Now that I'm thinking back, remembering that, you know, people were saying, oh, but he did these bad things or something. And there was somebody that joined the forum a while back. I can't even remember. It was a while. And they were questioning, oh, well, you know, this law of one material, it's, you know, it's, there's evil in it because look at these people they were associated with and they were doing these bad things. It was that kind of thing. That's what it was.
Yes. Well, and guilt by association is a known method of trying to smear people, but it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
I think Don's life holds up to the most rigorous examination, as does mine, as does Jim's. We spend our lives in the service of good to the best of our ability.
Well, I was one of the ones defending you on that thread, that's for sure.
I sure do thank you for that. But really, the work doesn't need any defense. It stands by itself, and I've always felt like that.
Oh, yeah,
let people
I agree.
Look at the work, you know, forget the humans involved, because what are we humans but a bunch of bozos? It's a miracle that we were able, by our intention to serve, to come together that way, Don and Jim and I. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful time for all of us. But, I mean, I continue to feel that people that gather at L&L are part of a labor of love that is given, you know, its energy from above. It's totally one that was born in love and continues in love. And I think people that come to our site feel that, feel the authenticity and the reality of our intention. And that has never wavered, and we will not waver. You know, the days of our life are set happily on the path of service to others.
Absolutely. Do you have all of his books, Andrea's books?
No, I don't think I have all of them. I have most of them. The sad part is that he wrote several manuscripts, one of which I edited, so I know for sure that, you know, he continued writing, and he did a beautiful job of, you know, doing the research and showing the research in such a way that it was readable to the regular reader, but it was rigorously scientific at the same time. And the one that I edited was, I think it was called, he was going to call it Time No Longer, and it was about the extremely low frequency, the ELF energy that was coming from Russia. And he had evidence, and he had it laid out in that book. And, you know, he had a lot about Tesla and Tesla-driven research, which, of course, is very, very involved in psychic things, too. And that book was sent to the publisher, and somewhere in the publisher, they never would publish it. They would give all kinds of reasons for not publishing it. They would continue to pay him and keep him under contract so that he couldn't write the book and give it to somebody else, and effectively shut him off from publishing after Uri. I don't think he got any books published after that, but he wrote several. So it's very frustrating to him.
I just did a search just on Amazon.com, just out of curiosity, and The Sacred Mushroom looked real interesting. Have you read that one? It looked like it was put in fictional form.
What was it called?
The Sacred Mushroom. It was all about...
Oh, no. It was he usually wrote a combination of pure research and anecdotes, and he wrote about how he got the information as well as the information.
Oh, okay. So,
I did read
because the reviews make it sound like it's in a fiction format, you know, like a story format. So
I don't believe it was fictional.
Okay.
But
wondering.
Yeah, I read it at one time and did not think it was his best work, but it was good.
I found something else really interesting. He's got this paper, a 52-page paper called Water Decomposition by AC Electrolysis. And it says here he reportedly drove his home for hundreds of thousands of miles around North America in the 1970s using only water as fuel. And this is a paper on electrolysis, splitting the water molecule. That's exactly what that machine does. It's sitting in your kitchen.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? Well,
yeah.
I know that he had patents. His fortune, at one time he was a millionaire, and his fortune was based on the patents that he did in pure research that was involved in helping deaf people hear. And some of his products were really effective in improving the hearing of people that were considered completely deaf. So he was a very clever fellow. And whatever he put his mind to, he usually had a good deal of success in investigating.
You haven't read this one by chance, the water
electrolysis. I
haven't
read that one, no.
Okay, of course I'm curious, being that that's my business.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been using the electrolysis.
I don't even know where that book might be located, but it might be worth a search.
Well, they have it on Amazon.com.
Oh, well, there you go.
But they have one copy, but I guess now they have zero. Yeah, well, being that that's what I do, you know, that's my business, I'm particularly interested in that. Of course, they've been using the ionizer machines in Japanese hospitals since 1975.
Isn't
technology
that
actually
an
goes
incredible
back to
coincidence that you and I would find this in our background? That somebody that
yeah,
one of Don's best friends was actually working in your area in the 70s.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
that's my
an incredible coincidence.
I find that pretty interesting.
Synchronicity strikes again, Monica.
Mike,
amazing.
Look at that machine and with a whole new light now, you know, with a whole new perspective. Very interesting.
Well, once again,
we
managed to get one question answered. We're thorough, but we're slow, let's put it that way.
But that was a fascinating story that you told, and we are just about out of time. Don, well, I know. I guess all that happened before Don, before you were around, Don. Jim.
No, I was in the picture at that time.
She was
no,
going
I mean,
to ask you that question.
Oh,
I
excuse me.
Yeah. I meant to say Jim, and I called Don. Was that you were before? That was before you were in the picture, Jim.
Right. I was living on the land in central Kentucky at that time, about 70 miles away from where I met Don and Carla later.
Okay.
Incidentally, to give you a quick little idea about how this material that Andrea taught through remote viewing can be used positively, we ran into a reader of Law of One who is an ex-Navy SEAL, Michael Jaco, wrote a book called The Spiritual Warrior, and he used remote viewing to keep from running into the enemy. And as a SEAL, he had a lot of encounters here and there in 24 years, and he said he was very grateful to never having to have killed the person because he was able to use remote viewing.
Interesting. So that's an example of using it for good instead of for bad, huh?
Right.
He was able to avoid that. Interesting. Okay, well, we are out of time, so let's see. There will not be a show next week, and because you guys are going to be busy with your big party, homecoming.
It's going to be fun. I hope
all
of you will send us a little happy prayer.
Absolutely, and I'm sure everything will go very smoothly, and I hope you all have a wonderful time, and we'll be back next week. So thanks again for everything. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, check out llresearch.org, which is LL Research archive website featuring the Law of One material, over 1,500 transcripts, 11 publications, interviews, speeches, and more. And you can participate in discussion about the Law of One and other spiritually oriented topics at bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. And you can also submit questions, comments, or discussion topics at bringforth.org. Just look for the thread entitled Discussion Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions. And I'm your host, Monica Liao. And we are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, except not next Friday, which is, what, the 30th?
Yes.
And that means, so we'll be back on September 6th. Have a great week.